Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation
with Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
About 8 minutes after 11 p.m. here on a Sunday night. Program 178 in the WGN Radio Theater series. I am your genial host, Carl Amari. I'm all in red, Lisa.
You always wear that jacket.
Very
so
red.
You're always red. With a little orange underneath.
It's a good combo. It's a very clashing combo.
It's nice.
To my right, the vivacious Lisa Wolf. How are you, Lisa?
Hi, Carl.
Look at those dimples. My goodness. Too bad this isn't television. And in the booth, we have Shantae Garth. She is our producer. She's the best in the biz. We love her. And tonight, we have some classic radio shows for everybody. In fact, we have one show that I can't wait to hear this. I haven't heard it in a long time. Suspense with Jack Benny as the lead in Suspense. It ought to be great. Then it's The Great Gildersleeve starring Hal Perry, my crabby brother's least favorite radio show. And then yours truly, Johnny Dollar. We have a lot of people asking for Johnny Dollar, right, Lisa?
We sure do. Everybody's favorite.
All of that is brought to you by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actress stars in the upcoming film Beatrice at Dinner, about a healer who uses Eastern techniques to treat patients at a cancer clinic.
Mm-hmm. Where do they win?
And the winner gets two tickets to the Tony Award-winning musical Disney's Mary Poppins, playing right now at the Mercury Theater Chicago.
All right. What was the song on that one again? What was a Jim
Jolly Holiday.
No, what's the famous song from Mary Poppins?
You said there's it the a other lot day. Of them. Which one? Chim Chiminy?
Yeah, Chim Chiminy. Chim Chiminy, Chim Chiminy, Chim Chim Chiri. You get to see that if you win. All you got to do is name this actress. 312-981-7200. All right, here's a hint. She played the love interest of Will Smith's character in Wild Wild West.
And speaking of sleeping, I'm really tired, Artie. Do you think I could borrow something to wear?
Oh, this girl is so cute.
She is.
She's just a little cutie pie. 312-981-7200. Who is that great actress? We'll find our winner after these words.
This is the WGN Radio Theater. We're playing Celebrity Scoop. We're going to play that movie clip one more time.
And speaking of sleeping, I'm really tired, Artie. Do you think I could borrow something to wear?
We have Karen on the line. Hi, Karen.
Oh, wait a second.
Whoops.
That's my fault.
Okay.
All right, there we go,
there.
Karen.
Where's Karen?
There she is.
I'm here.
Hi, how are you?
I'm wonderful. How
good,
are you?
Good, good. So glad you called in. And can you tell us who that actress is that Carl's enamored with?
Yes, it's Selma Hayek.
Selma Hayek is exactly right. And we are thrilled to give you a pair of tickets to the Tony Award-winning musical. It's Disney's Mary Poppins. Everybody loves Mary Poppins.
That's wonderful.
That's
Thank
for sure.
Thank you so much.
You are so welcome. It's playing through May 28th at the Mercury Theater Chicago. And you can check it out at Mercury Theater Chicago. Thank you for calling in, Karen. We hope you absolutely
you.
Love the show.
Thanks, Karen.
I'm sure we will. Thank you
Great.
So very much.
You're welcome. All right.
Okay.
Have fun.
Bye.
And it's time now for some classic radio, Lisa. You ready for this?
I'm ready.
Suspense. It was a mystery series that was actually conceived as a potential radio vehicle for Alfred Hitchcock to direct. Think about that. Alfred Hitchcock, one of the most famous names in directing, they were trying to woo him to the CBS microphones to direct this series, and he was interested at first. They did a pilot with him, but it never he never did the series.
Right.
But that's what this whole thing was about. It's kind of how it came about. They were like, let's get Alfred Hitchcock. We'll do a show called Suspense. He'll direct the actors in it. And it'll be radio's outstanding theater of thrills. We'll get great actors in it because he'll draw the names, you know, with an Alfred Hitchcock as the director. They get to work. I mean, it would be, imagine this now, right? The greatest director of all time, and he's the director of a radio series, and you'd get to work with him for a week,
right?
How cool would that be?
Yeah, I'd
so that
be
was the concept. But for some reason, I guess Alfred Hitchcock just said, you know, I'm just too busy. I can't do it. But they went on with the series anyway, and they had great directors like Norman Macdonald and Elliot Lewis and things like that. Well, it came to radio in 1942, lasted all the way to 1962, and nearly 1,000 broadcasts, and then it made a transition to television in 1949. We have an episode now starring Jack Benny. It's called Murder in G-Flat. It's from April 5th, 1951. Here's part one of Suspense.
Autolite and its 96,000 dealers present Suspense. Tonight, Autolite brings you a story of treachery and greed. A story we call Murder in G-Flat, starring Mr. Jack Benny.
Greetings, Pepito, my favorite free holy friar. What's on the menu?
The special, Senor Wilcox, she is Autolite Stay Full Battery.
You mean you're serving the battery that needs water only three times a year in normal car use?
Si. What is better for quick, dependable starts, huh?
Ah, nothing's better than an Autolite Stay Full, that frisky friend of car owners from coast to coast. But...
what? You don't want one, senor?
Everybody wants an Autolite Stay Full. The buxom battery with fiberglass retaining mats protecting every positive plate to prevent shedding and flaking, and to keep the Autolite Stay Full battery power-packed for paramount performance.
Si. How you want it, senor?
Why, it's perfect just as it is, Pepito, and built to give longer life, as proved by tests conducted according to accepted life cycle standards. So, friends... have your neighborhood Autolite battery dealer serve your car an Autolite Stay Full battery, the battery that needs water only three times a year in normal car use.
Si. And remember...
you're always right with Autolite.
And now with Murder in G-Flat and the transcribed performance of Mr. Jack Benny, Autolite hopes once again to keep you in suspense.
A lieutenant in here, sir, in the rec hall.
What's he doing in the rec hall?
Well, he thought he'd tune the piano while I was waiting, Lieutenant.
Sunday night. Why couldn't you guys pick a better night than Sunday night? My one day off, and I have to come down.
Sorry, we had to call you, Joe.
This is the guy, huh?
Yeah. Hey, you.
That's it. C flat. If I had my wrench...
this is the lieutenant.
Oh, I'm sorry, Lieutenant.
Same.
My name is Remington. Hercules Remington.
That's it, Joe. We checked.
Huh. Pardon me, Lieutenant, but my wife, Martha, is going to be awfully worried. You see, I haven't seen her since this morning. They told
me... you haven't seen your wife since this morning?
No, and I thought that if I could phone her and at least tell her where I am...
where'd you pick him up?
Coney Island, Joe. He called us from there.
Yes, and I should have called my wife, too. Look, Lieutenant, I don't want to seem persistent about
this.
You'll
have plenty of time later to call your wife. Now, give the lieutenant the story in detail, just like you told it to me on the way down here to the station.
What kind of work do you do, Remington?
Well, I'm a piano tuner, Lieutenant. Yours is out of tune. C-flat, Lieutenant. See, if I could get my bag, I'd tune...
look, Remington, I haven't got all night. Now, either get on with your story or I'll have...
all right, Lieutenant. But I really would like to call my wife first.
Start your story.
All right. But if there's any explaining to be done to my wife, you guys will have to do it.
We'll be happy to. Now, go ahead.
Yes, sir. Well, Lieutenant, this whole mess started yesterday morning, Saturday. I got up, had breakfast with my wife, Martha, and my Uncle Herman. He's my black sheep uncle of the family. He's a carnival man, came to work at the World's Fair here, and has been living with us ever since. I think he ought to pay at least one-third of the rent, but Martha, well, she feels sorry for him. Anyway, I left the house around 10 o'clock on my way to the Lippenridge School of Music. I usually tune their pianos on the first Saturday of the month. You see, because there aren't any classes there on that Saturday. I catch the BMT at 57th and get off at Union Square. Well, yesterday morning I got on the subway, just like I always do. I carry a little ordinary brown bag with all my tools in it and usually lay it right next to me under the seat. I was just sitting there, thinking hard, wondering how I was going to meet the bills at the end of the month, when a man sat down next to me. He shoved something under the seat and just sat there staring ahead. B-flat, D-flat, B-flat, 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 B-flat.
I beg your pardon.
Oh, I'm sorry. I guess I got carried away for a moment. Four stops later, the man got up, reached under the seat, pulled out a little brown bag, and started for the door. I remember noticing he was bald-headed and wearing big black horn-rimmed glasses. For a minute, I thought he'd stolen my bag of tools, but I reached my hand under the seat and found my bag was still there. I remember sort of chuckling to myself, thinking of the coincidence that he'd been carrying the same type of bag. Well, anyway, I got off at Union Square and walked up to the Lippenridge School of Music on 14th. There are four floors there, you know, a piano on each floor, and I usually start at the top and work my way down. Well, since the school doesn't have any classes on Saturday, the place was deserted. That one's sour. Yeah, D flat. I'll soon have that in shape. What the... I zipped open my bag to take out my tuning hammer and my wedges, but there were no tools in my bag. The tools were gone, and in their place were bundles and bundles of crisp $10 bills. And then it hit me. The little bald-headed man on the subway. The man who sat down next to me. This bag belonged to him. He picked up mine by mistake. There was no name on the bag, no identification of any kind. I started counting one of the bundles. Each bundle contained $1,000 in $10 bills, and there were 25 bundles. I had just come heir to $25,000. When I got home, Martha was washing some clothes out on the back porch, and Uncle Herman was rolling pennies for his pitch penny concession. I called both of them into the living room, pulled all the shades down, closed and locked all the doors, and set the bag on the table.
Hercules, what are you doing back home so soon?
What kind of nonsense is this, nephew?
Martha, Uncle Herman.
You look awful pale.
I guess I do.
Hercules, what's the matter with you?
Listen to me, both of you. I'm rich.
Oh, for heaven's sakes, Hercules, at your age.
I'm not lying to you.
Look, I gotta get out.
You must be sick.
Look, will both of you be quiet for just a minute?
Sounds like he's drunk.
Are you sick, Hercules?
Look, I'm not sick and I'm not drunk. I've got it right here.
You've got what?
Look. Wow.
Hercules.
Now do you believe me? Now do you believe I'm not sick or drunk? Look at it. $25,000.
$25,000? That's a lot of money.
Hercules, where'd you get all this money?
I found it.
Found it?
Found it?
Yes,
Listen to me, Hercules Remington, don't you lie to me. Where'd you get all that money?
I told you, Martha, I found it.
I haven't lived with you for 10 years for nothing. I know when you're lying to me. Now tell me, where'd you get all this money?
Okay, if I tell you the truth, I know you won't believe
it. Well, tell me anyway.
Well, all right. Look, this morning I got on the subway, just like I always do. And some little bald-headed man with black horn-rimmed glasses sat down next to me. When he got up to get off the subway, I noticed he was carrying a brown bag, just like mine. At first I thought it was mine. But mine was still under the seat. Anyway, when I got to the music school, I opened my bag and all this money was in it. Mm.
Sounds fantastic.
Hercules.
But it's the truth. The little man picked up my bag by mistake. I searched this one for some identification, but there isn't any.
Then you mean the little bald-headed man has your bag with the tools in it?
I guess he does.
It seems odd that anyone would be carrying this much money around in a little brown bag.
Odd or not, the fact still remains that I didn't steal it.
Well, I guess there isn't any way that you could get a hold of this man, so we'll just have to turn the money over to the police.
The police?
Yes, I said the police.
But why?
Why? Good heavens, Hercules, you don't expect to keep this money.
Why not?
Which isn't ours.
Why? Why isn't it ours? I found it. I didn't steal it, Martha.
Hercules.
Martha, don't you see? Maybe this is fate. Maybe we were meant to have this money. Maybe if
you're crazy. You're out of your head. You're talking like a madman, and I won't have it.
But Martha...
You didn't come by this money honestly. It isn't legally yours.
Now, wait a minute, Martha. Maybe Hercules is
a little... Now, you stay out of this, Uncle Herman. Hercules, you're going to take this money to the police.
No. No, I'm not. I'm not going to take this to the police or anyone else. Do you understand me? I'm not going to take this money to the police.
Hercules, I don't understand you at all. But mark my words, you'll pay for this.
Well,
don't pay no attention to her, nephew.
But why does she have to be that way? Why can't she understand me just this once? Why can't she see my side of it? See, I didn't steal this money.
No, you didn't, nephew.
And I'm going to keep it.
Sure you are, nephew. Sure you are. You're going to keep it.
You bet I am. The next morning, that was this morning, Sunday, Martha wouldn't speak to me at all. Her eyes were all red and puffed up. I could see that she'd been crying. And Uncle Herman wasn't doing much talking either. Martha just kept sniffling as she puttered around the stove. Martha, my peach isn't peeled.
Peel it yourself.
But I...
Here, I'll peel it for you, nephew.
Thanks, Uncle Herman. Martha, please, won't
you
try...
Don't you talk to me.
Now, don't be too hard on him, Martha. After all, a man's got a right...
I told you once, Uncle Herman, you stay out of this. It's none of your business.
Sorry. She's plenty mad. Well, ain't you gonna answer the phone?
Hello?
Mr. Remington?
Yes?
Hercules Remington?
Yes, who is this, please?
I want to return your bag of piano tools to you, Mr. Remington.
I believe
there was a slight mix-up. I believe in my haste I picked up your bag instead.
But how did you find me? I mean...
Oh, it was quite simple. There's only one piano tuner with the initials HR in New York City.
Well, what do you know?
You do want your piano tools back, don't you, Mr. Remington?
Listen to me.
I don't think you'd like the idea of not being able to tune any more pianos.
What?
And I'd like to have my bag returned.
Of course.
As soon as possible.
Yes.
Tonight.
Tonight?
At 9:30 tonight. Meet me at Madison Square Garden.
Madison Square Garden?
At 9:30 at the 49th Street entrance. The door on the far end will be left slightly open. And please be prompt, Mr. Remington, with my brown bag. You see, it will displease my business partner considerably if he finds I've lost the bag.
All right. The 49th Street entrance, the door on the far end.
Hercules, what's wrong? Well, you're as white as a ghost.
I am?
You sure are?
I guess I should be. That was the little bald-headed man with horn-rimmed glasses, Uncle Herman. I've just lost $25,000.
All right, there's the first portion of a good episode of Suspense called Murder in G-Flat, starring Jack Benny, with a great cast of characters, including Bea Benaderet as the woman there, his wife, I believe, and she was the voice of Betty Rubble on the Flintstones. I gotta love that.
We all love Betty.
Oh, yeah. All right, let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, we're back. And it's really, really interesting because Lisa came in with a bag of Twizzlers today.
It's like a big one-pound monster.
And I just hours ago bought two bags of Twizzlers when I was grocery shopping with my daughter, Rachel, at Target.
Well, I was grocery shopping with my daughter, Jillian, at Jewel. And I bought that
so
for you.
So within a few minutes apart, probably, we each purchased a bag of Twizzlers.
But I bought them for you because I know you love Twizzlers.
I love Twizzlers.
Not me as much, but you.
As much as I love Twizzlers, this is the first time I think I ever bought these big mega bags of them. And it's just, how weird is that?
Now, if you're buying something for me, what would you choose? Because it wouldn't be Twizzlers. What's my
you
favorite?
You like dark chocolate.
Yeah, but what if you had to pick a candy, like a bag type thing at a Jewel, what would you get?
Oh, Junior Mints. Is that what you like?
Yeah.
Yeah, she likes Junior Mints.
That's what I like.
So, you know what? We have a text line. Tell us what your favorite candy is. We'll name some candies because I love candy. I try not to eat too much of it because, you know, as you get older, it's tough to lose the weight.
It sure is.
But text us 312-981-7200. Twizzlers are not my favorite candy, though.
No, I know.
My favorite candy is...
Chunky.
Oh, there's just nothing better than a chunky.
I wouldn't eat a chunky for
anything. It's the best candy on the planet. Yeah. I mean...
Remember the one I bought you?
Oh, thanks, Roger. Yeah.
I'm going to have to go over there. We're about two blocks away from that store.
He bought me some nice chunkies.
Yeah, I felt a little left out that day.
So, folks out there.
I'm going to have to get you, I'll get you like one huge Junior Mint.
Yeah, giant Junior Mint.
I don't even need a huge one. One little one, and I'm
happy.
You'll
need a carving knife for it.
That's what I need.
Like a turkey knife.
Sugar is just not good for you.
No,
that's the bottom line. So
text us in what your favorite candy is. 312-981-7200. We'll name some of them on the next break. But right now, it's the conclusion to Jack Benny starring in Suspense.
Uncle Herman went in the living room to read the Sunday paper. I went in the bedroom to tell Martha about the phone call. But she wasn't there. In fact, she wasn't anywhere in the house. She was gone, and I figured that she'd probably gone over to her sister's house. I was so nervous the rest of the afternoon, I couldn't eat a thing. I left the house for Madison Square Garden about 9 o'clock. From riches to rags in about 24 hours. I was back riding the subway. I walked up 8th Avenue to the garden. I turned and walked up 49th Street to the entrance and stopped. Sure enough, one of the doors on the far end was open a little, just as the little man had told me it would be. I slipped in through the open door. It was pitch black. I couldn't see a thing. Hello? Hello? Anybody here? Hello? Is there anyone here? What the? I stumbled over something and almost fell. I struck a match and looked down at a body. The body of the little man in horn-rimmed glasses. His head was all covered with blood. I started to blow out the match, and then something caught my eye. Lying next to his body was my brown bag with the initials HR. And next to the bag, covered with blood, was my tuning hammer.
Is bringing you Mr. Jack Benny in Murder in G-Flat. Tonight's production in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
Please, Lieutenant, may I call my wife? I want to...
Finish your story first, Mr. Remington. You can call her after that.
Oh. Oh, all right.
Now, you were standing over the body of this man in Madison Square Garden. You found your tuning hammer next to the body.
Yes. Yes, my tuning hammer. Let me tell you, Lieutenant. I was scared. Plenty scared. Here I was standing over a dead man in Madison Square Garden. And clutched in my hand was his brown bag containing $25,000. Who would kill him? Who would... But I couldn't stop to think about that. Now I had to get out of there and fast and take my bag and hammer lying on the floor with me. I started to reach for my bag when a sound, G flat. Someone had opened up a knife. Whoever was coming toward me, I blew out the match and waited. Who was in that corridor with me? Was it the business partner of the little man? Was it... I started to move backwards, and then a big black figure loomed up at me. With all my strength, I brought the brown bag swinging up from the floor. I ran until I thought my legs were gone. My mind was all fogged up now. I couldn't think straight. Who was the guy who just tried to kill me? One thing I knew for sure, I had to get rid of this money until I could think things out. But where? Where could I get rid of it? I neared the corner of 59th and 8th Avenue and then saw it. A bus terminal. Why not? A public locker in the bus station. I opened the door and walked in.
Scranton, Pittsburgh, and Philadelphia leaving in 10 minutes.
Yes, ma'am, in about 20 minutes.
Excuse me, mister. I'd like to have a key for a locker.
Just a second.
G sharp.
What'd you say?
Oh, nothing.
What do you know? Haven't got an empty one right now. Have to wait a little while.
You mean out of all of these hundreds of lockers, you haven't got one empty?
Well, I'm sorry, mister, but you can see for yourself. A lot of servicemen in town over the weekend.
Well, how long will it be?
10, 15 minutes. Maybe a couple hours.
Okay, I'll wait. I'll sit over there. I bought a paper at the newsstand and sat down on one of the benches. I didn't even know what I was reading. I just kept... And then I saw it. On page 2. A complete account of a robbery that had occurred on Friday night at one of the downtown post offices. 2 bandits had escaped with $25,000 in $10 bills. This was it. It must have been. But would the police believe a story like that? Of course they wouldn't. I had the money, and it was my tuning hammer there, lying next to the body in the garden. I got out of that bus terminal in a hurry and walked up 8th Avenue. Where could I go? The only place I could think of was Coney Island. Coney Island and Uncle Herman and his pitch penny concession. It was late, and the island amusement park was almost deserted. It was cold and close to 11. Uncle Herman was leaning against the side of his concession as I walked up.
Why, nephew? What are you doing out this way?
Uncle Herman, quick, let's go in back.
All right. There ain't no customers anyway. Yeah. Now, what happened, Hercules? Did you give the money back to the man?
I went to meet him at the garden, just like he told me. But when I got there and I found him, he was dead.
Dead?
He'd been... beat over the head with my tuning hammer.
Why, Hercules.
I was just about to grab my hammer and bag and get out of there when someone made a lunge at me in the dark. But I got away. I went to a bus terminal to put the money in a locker. I had to wait. And then I read that the money is stolen post office money.
Oh, you got yourself in a mess, nephew.
I'm frantic. I don't know what to do. That's why I came here.
Well, I'm glad you did, nephew. Glad you did.
But what am I going to do?
Well, best thing would be to go back and get that hammer and bag. Leave the money here. I'll hide it for you.
But maybe I ought to go to the police.
You can't go to the police with that story. They'd never believe you, Hercules.
I know,
Bring your bag and come with me, nephew. I got a hiding place for that money that no one will ever find.
Uncle Herman locked his place up, and then he led me over to the funhouse. It was closed now, and the place was all dark. But Uncle Herman had a key. He led me up some stairs to a high ramp that people climb on, you know, to slide down the big chute. He stopped at one of them.
Here, nephew.
Right under this top chute, we'll just pry one of the boards loose a little and slip the bag with the money underneath. No one in the world will ever look for it. There we are. Now, give me the bag, nephew.
Here you are, Uncle Herman. Are you sure that no one will find it here?
Absolutely, nephew. You and I are the only ones who know where it is. There's nothing to be afraid of. Now, hand me the bag.
Here you are.
That's it. Now, let's just check to make sure that...
Oh, what's the matter, Uncle Herman?
Where's the money, nephew?
The money? What are you talking about? It's in the...
Is this what you call money? Or this bag's got nothing in it but bundles of torn newspaper?
I don't understand.
Hercules, dear nephew, what did you do with the money?
I don't know. It was in there. You saw it yourself when I brought it
home. This a scheme of yours, Hercules?
Scheme?
Trying to cheat on your dear old uncle, aren't you, Hercules?
Uncle Herman, what are you talking about?
Where's the money, Hercules?
G-flat. That knife. G-flat.
This ain't no time to play games with your Uncle Herman, Hercules.
Uncle Herman, where were you tonight?
What's that, Hercules?
G-flat. Your knife. It's G-flat.
Looks like this thing has got you going, Hercules.
It was you in the garden, wasn't it, Uncle Herman? You killed him.
Let's not waste any more time, nephew. Now tell me where that money is.
I don't know.
Stop lying to your dear uncle, Hercules.
I'm not lying.
I usually use this knife to scale fish. The smell of fish is stronger than the smell of blood.
But I tell you, I don't know where that money is.
You're lying to me. You came down here just to throw me off, didn't you? Make me think you lost the money.
Uncle Herman, stay away from me.
All right, Hercules. So you won't tell your dear uncle.
He rushed at me with the knife. I stepped back, tripped over the board he had pried loose, and fell down. But Uncle Herman... He went hurtling over me, head over heels down the long slide. And I got back down at the bottom of the slide chute. He was dead.
The uncle had his neck broken, Lieutenant.
Yeah. What about the money?
Well, Mr. Remington's wife turned it over to the authorities this morning about 11 o'clock. She said the money wasn't his and she didn't want him carrying it around.
Well, I guess that'll be all, Mr. Remington. You can go now.
But isn't it dangerous? I mean, the partner is still...
We picked up his business partner a few hours after the robbery.
Oh.
But just in case you happen to come across another $25,000 that doesn't belong to you, promise me that you'll get in touch with the authorities, will you, Mr. Remington?
Oh, I've learned my lesson, Lieutenant. Believe you me, I have.
Yeah, good.
Oh, for heaven's sakes, I almost forgot. I got to call my wife. She's probably frantic by now.
There's a payphone right outside in the corridor.
Payphone?
Yeah, right around the corner. You can't miss it.
Hmm. Well, she's waited this long. I think I'll just tell her when I get home.
Suspense. Presented by Autolite. Tonight's star, Mr. Jack Benny.
Ah, fine meal, Pepito. So long.
Hey, no dessert, Senor Wilcox?
I never desert, Pepito. I'm always faithful to those 400 fine products for cars, trucks, tractors, planes, and boats made by Autolite in 28 plants from coast to coast. These include complete ignition systems used as original factory equipment on many leading makes of our finest cars. Generators, coils, distributors, electric windshield wipers, voltage regulators, wire and cable, starting motors, and many more. And they're all engineered to fit together perfectly, work together perfectly, because they're all part of the Autolite team. So, friends, don't accept electrical parts supposed to be as good. Ask for and insist on Autolite original factory parts at your neighborhood service station, car dealer, garage, or repair shop. Remember, you're always right with Autolite. Next week on Suspense, our stars will be Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz in Early to Death. And in weeks to come, you will hear such famous stars as James Stewart, Ann Baxter, and Rosalind Russell, all on Suspense. Suspense is produced and directed by Elliot Lewis, with music composed by Lucian Morawek and conducted by Lud Gluskin. Murder in G-Flat was written for Suspense by Richard George Petticini. Portions of this program were transcribed. In tonight's cast, Joseph Kearns was heard as Uncle Herman, Bea Benaderet as Martha, and Larry Thor as the lieutenant. Others in the cast were Clayton Post, Jack Crucian, and Paul Fries. Jack Benny may be heard each Sunday on CBS on his own radio program, The Jack Benny Show. And remember, next week on Suspense, Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz in a story about a mysterious airplane crash in the mountains of Mexico. A tale we call Early to Death.
Buy Autolite Stay-Full batteries, Autolite resistor type or standard type spark plugs, Autolite electrical parts at your neighborhood Autolite dealers. Switch to Autolite. Good night.
Tonight, Autolite salutes the men and women leaders in boys clubs all over America. This is National Boys Club Week, a time to remember that our boys clubs serve the boy, the community, and the nation by training tomorrow's leaders today. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Hey, Lucy, next week you and I are going to do the suspense.
Let's do it.
Right?
Yeah. I'll be Lucy any day.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if that title does not ring a bell.
I was going to ask you. I know she did quite a few things that weren't comedies, but I don't know that one.
Well, I know that she did appear on Suspense with her husband, Ricky Ricardo.
Ricky Ricardo.
But I don't remember it being that name, but we'll check it out. All right, let's take a quick break. That was Suspense with Murder in G-Flat. From April 5th, 1951, Jack Benny in that cast. A great, great story. Hope you enjoyed it. When we come back, we'll name some of the candies that people have texted in to us. That's in just a few minutes here. All right, Lisa, some of the candies that were texted in by our listeners.
Vanilla bun, have you heard of that?
I've heard of vanilla...
ice cream?
No, I've heard of vanilla ice.
Did
vanilla
you say
ice.
The
ice baby?
Did you say bun?
Bun. B-U-N.
Yeah, the bun bar. Yeah.
Oh, you've heard of that.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, the original Mars bar.
Yeah.
Hershey milk chocolate with a jar of peanut butter and a spreader, which is interesting.
Raisinets, which is one of my
caps,
favorites.
Cherry sours, raisinets. I love snow caps. Those are always good. Oh, yum. We've got... Oh, let's see. There's some more here. We've got bullseyes, which are caramel creams.
Those are good.
Boston baked beans.
What's that? I thought that was like a...
You know lemon heads? You know the box that lemon heads
comes in? Yeah, they have those. Yeah.
It's another
type
in that line.
Yeah,
in that line.
We've got Butterfinger, Chunky, Good and Plenty, Juicy Fruits.
Juicy Fruits.
Yeah, malted milk balls.
Oh.
Lots of good stuff here.
Good.
And so funny, Roger, somebody texted in a picture of the Twizzlers package, and she said, believe it or not, I'm sitting here eating Twizzlers and enjoying your show. She said she works at Jewel, and I said, I just bought them at Jewel. So apparently they had this big display right when I walked in.
Yeah, but I bought mine at Target.
Well, you don't count. When I walked in of Twizzlers, and everybody went to Jewel, but the Target people don't count, but everybody bought them from Jewel.
Target's a nice place.
I love Target, but this was between me and this texter.
Well, it's two against one is what you're saying.
No, it's just doesn't include Carl.
Oh, okay.
Oh, boy. Well, we have some Twizzlers down here, Raj, if you want to stop by.
Raj,
okay. I used to buy buckets. There's a competitor called Red Vines.
Yeah, Red Vines.
And
my daughter used
good.
To like those.
I used to buy buckets of those, like the big buckets, for the last school I was at for our staff meetings. And when I retired, the next year I had two big buckets delivered to them for the beginning of the year.
Oh, that was nice.
Aww.
And I love those. But like you said, Lisa, it's sugar.
Sugar.
Yeah.
I know.
Speaking of, just
a little bit.
Licorice.
Not too much.
Have either of you ever eaten nibs?
Yes.
Oh, the cherry nibs.
Yeah.
Cherry nibs are even better than Twizzlers.
Good.
Yeah, they are good.
They are. And I will not eat black licorice. I don't like the taste.
But you like the nibs?
No, they make black nibs too. But
yeah.
I don't like the black licorice. I don't like the taste.
Yeah, no, I understand.
It's an acquired taste for sure.
They've got grape and chocolate licorice too.
I've had the chocolate. I tried the chocolate.
Uh-huh.
You didn't care for it?
What numbers do you use to dial 911?
Carl.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
How's that? Pretty good? Ding. There's my
Bill Curtis is pretty darn good.
Yes, he is. This is hour two of the WGN Radio Theater program, 178 in the series. Our text line is 312-981-7200, Texas. And let us know if there's something you want to hear or have any comments for Lisa and I or... Or if you want to tell us what your favorite candy is.
It doesn't have to be about candy. We are so happy to read any of your texts.
That's right. Very, very true. In this hour, it's the great Gildersleeve. And speaking of candy, he goes to the dentist because he has a toothache. From 1942, which was, I think, the second year it was on the air. Very early in the run, Hal Perry as Gildersleeve. Then a little later, Edmund O'Brien stars in Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar from 1950, all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow!
This actress stars as Sally Carrera, a Porsche, in the upcoming film Cars 3, the third installment in the Cars franchise.
Your dad would like that. He drives a Porsche.
Yes, he does.
Yeah.
But he's, you know, he deserves it.
Mr. Matenki. I could see him cruising around in that hot car.
Yeah, well, I'll just steer clear of him cruising around in that hot car.
All right, what do they win?
The winner gets a $25 gift certificate for Lou Malnati.
All right, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. She was Steve Martin's wife in Cheaper by the Dozen.
All right, but I have a plan. I mean, we just take it one day at a time, and if you start to get overwhelmed or the kids stage a coup, you call me up, I'm home, end of trip.
All right, who is that great actress? 312.
We are back. This is the WGN Radio Theater where Carl and I bicker for 3 hours, and we play classic radio. We're playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it again.
All right, but I have a plan. I mean, we just take it one day at a time, and if you start to get overwhelmed or the kids stage a coup, you call me up, I'm home, end of trip.
My kids love Cheaper by the Dozen. They made me watch various versions of that. We've got Bob on the phone. Hey, Bob.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, good.
You recognize that actress?
Sounds like Bonnie Hunt.
It is Bonnie Hunt. You are absolutely right. You are a winner. You've won a $25 gift card for Lou Malnati's, which is home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza, and it is delicious. You can find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations. You can order online at loumalnati's.com. Hey, Bob, thank you so much for calling in.
All right, go Cubs.
Take care. Yeah,
that's
we
right.
hope so.
Thanks, Bob. All right, it is time now for the great Gildersleeve. I love this series. Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve. He was a character on Fibber McGee and Molly, and it was played by Hal Perry. And then in 1941, he spun off. It was radio's first spinoff for his own radio series, sponsored by Kraft. He moved from Wistful Vista, where he was Fibber's neighbor, to the town of Summerfield, and he became the town's water commissioner, and he was a bachelor. And, you know, he liked to date all the women in Summerfield. I like this guy. I like this guy.
I know.
He was raising his niece, Marjorie, and his nephew, Leroy. He had a cook named Birdie. And it really was the first show of a single parent raising children. Came to television in 1957, but Hal Perry had left for another series in 1950 called Honest Harold. Didn't work out too well for him. Willard Waterman came in 1950 and then took it to television. Willard Waterman. He sounded so much like Hal Perry. Those two guys were almost interchangeable voice-wise. So we have an episode now from very early in the run, from December 6, 1942. It's called The Toothache. He has a toothache, so he decides to visit the dentist. Here's Hal Perry in part one of The Great Gildersleeve.
Kraft presents The Great Gildersleeve. Kraft Cheese Company will also bring you Bing Crosby every Thursday night. Present each week at this time, Harold Perry as The Great Gildersleeve, written by John Wheaton. Now let's join our friend, The Great Gildersleeve. For several days, he's been harboring a dark secret, to wit, the third tooth from the rear on the upper left-hand side has been giving him a little trouble.
Oh, it has not.
This morning, after lingering alone over a hearty breakfast, he rises from the table, saunters past the sideboard, sneaks a piece of taffy from the bonbon dish, pops it into his mouth, and...
Ouch! Ew.
Excuse me, what's the trouble? You got toothache?
No, Bertie, certainly not. I just happened to bite on something, that's all.
Your tongue, maybe?
Yeah, my tongue.
Well, there's only one thing to do about a bad tooth.
I know that, but I'd rather not be reminded of it.
Oh, this don't hurt none.
And anyway, I haven't got a bad tooth. What do you do, Bertie?
Well, you got a penny?
A what?
A penny. Have you got a penny?
Well, I have, but don't let it get around. The government might hear about it.
All right, you take your penny and you put it in your mouth. Now, you put it next to the gum where the tooth hurts, and you keep it there for 2 days. Don't even take it out.
Yeah, but how do I eat?
Well, you just eat around it.
Eat around.
And by the end of the second day, the penny will draw all the misery out of the tooth.
Can you guarantee that?
That's if the moon is right.
But suppose it isn't.
Well, then you still got the penny.
It's silly. And the toothache. Why wouldn't it be better just to break down and go to the dentist?
Well, that's good, too.
What's all this about, dentist?
Oh, I was just saying...
Nothing, Marjorie, nothing. Bertie and I were just having a little discussion. Weren't we, Bertie?
Yes, about people that don't take care of the teeth.
Hey, Bertie.
Well, I don't care. I don't care if I am a tattletale. When I know something's wrong with you, I ain't going to hide it.
You're right, Bertie.
You got to take care of yourself, Mr. Gildersleeve, and you got to take care of your teeth. Your teeth is my meal ticket.
Come on, Uncle Mort. Which tooth is it?
Marjorie, there's nothing whatever the matter with my tooth. I'm just a little aware of it, that's all.
That settles it. You're going to the dentist.
No, my
You've
dear.
You've been putting it off and putting it off, and you're not going to put it off any longer.
Oh, yes, I am. Oh, no, I'm not. I'm cornered.
When did you go to the dentist last? Tell me.
Well, it was very recently.
It was?
Yes, it was only, it was only...
I thought so.
No, it was even more recent than that. I remember it perfectly. I just don't remember the date.
I'll bet you don't.
Well, why should I? You asked Donald Nelson when he went to the dentist last. I bet he can't tell you either. But ask him something important, and he's got it right at his fingertips. What are you laughing at, Bertie?
Getting that man to the dentist is just like pulling teeth.
You keep out of this, Bertie, and keep pulling teeth out of it, too. I never saw people in such a hurry to rush a man to the dentist.
You know what I think, Uncle Mort? I think you're afraid.
Afraid? Nothing.
You ought to be ashamed. Even Leroy isn't afraid of the dentist. He went yesterday and he's going again today.
Well, I'm not afraid either.
Then why don't you call up Dr. Shanks and make an appointment?
Certainly. I'll call him up. I'll make an appointment.
Good.
Only don't rush me. Oops. What's that?
Just Leroy coming downstairs.
Sounds like a barrel of potatoes. Leroy, can't you ever walk?
Not now. I'm late for school. Goodbye.
Leroy, ain't you going to take your lunch?
Oop, almost forgot.
I'm just finishing it.
Well, I gotta get going.
Leroy, when was your appointment with the dentist?
You would have to bring that up. It's this afternoon, 3:30.
Would you be willing to let Uncle Mort go in your place?
You mean, let him go to the dentist instead of me?
Yes. Would you mind if he took your appointment?
Are you kidding?
Now, Marjorie, I don't want to rob the boy of his...
No, not at all. I'm glad to do it. What's the matter? You got a toothache?
It's nothing but a slight twinge. Nothing for everybody to get so excited about.
Oh, gee, that can be bad, though. You want to take care of that.
No, my boy. It's more important for you to keep your appointment. Take care of your teeth when you're young, and they'll take care of you when they'll take care of you.
But Uncle Mort, my tooth doesn't ache.
That's funny.
What?
Now that you mention it, neither does mine. It stopped. What do you know about that? Much ado about nothing, huh?
Uncle Mort?
Oh, there's Judge Hooker. I'm riding on his A card today. My hat and coat. I've got to go. Goodbye, Marjorie.
Goodbye, you big baby.
Hurry up, Gildy. I got the motor running.
Oh, good morning, Judge. Well, this looks like a wonderful day, doesn't it?
Never mind the salutation. This is costing me gas. Hop in. Well, how goes it, Gildy?
Well, tell the truth, Judge. Not so good. Did you ever have a tooth that... Hey, look out!
I saw him.
You saw him. Did you ever have a tooth that hurt whenever you bit down on a judge?
Did I ever have a tooth?
Well, just take a look in there. Is he in the bag?
Where? Judge, watch where you're going.
I'm watching.
Well, keep your hands on the wheel, you old goat.
I want to tell you, I had an impacted wisdom tooth once, and he had to go in there after with a hammer and a chisel.
Ooh.
Worst thing that ever happened to me. Only thing to do, though, if you got a bad tooth, get it out of there. Chop it out. Get rid of it. It'll only make you trouble.
But mine isn't a wisdom tooth.
Makes no difference. Does it ache when you chew candy?
Well, yes, it does.
Same as mine. It's impacted, all right. It'll have to come out.
Oh, I was afraid of that. You, Judge, watch out! Hooker, that was a little close.
Listen, who's driving this car?
I don't know. Is anybody driving it?
Well, it's my car. Don't be telling me how to drive it.
Well, it's my tooth, so don't be telling me what to do about it.
All right, Gildy. You want to get lockjaw, that's your business.
What do you mean, lockjaw?
A friend of my father's had a bad tooth like yours. He neglected it. He ended up with a lockjaw. Couldn't even open up his mouth to eat.
Yeah.
Had to go in there with a hammer and a chisel.
Oh, Horace! If you don't mind...
Well, I'm just telling you for your own good.
All right, I was feeling fine till you started talking. Hey, what are we stopping here for?
Barbershop. I gotta get a shave.
But I don't need a shave.
That's just too bad, Gildy. You forget, you happen to be sharing my car today.
Oh, I have to share your shave?
Well, no, you can walk the rest of the way if you want to.
All right, I will.
All right, go ahead.
By George, I would, too. I'd walk the whole way if it wasn't for this tooth.
Starting up again, is it? Now, I'll tell you what you want to
do. Oh, no, you won't. You're not going to get in there with that hammer and chisel again.
Get a quick shave, Floyd. I got Gildersleeve waiting here.
Oh, carpool, huh? How you been, Mr. Gildersleeve?
Not so well, Floyd. Tooth's been bothering me. This one I have.
Oh, yeah. Well, you think that's bad, huh? My wife's uncle had to have a tooth out last week. He lives 12 miles out of town, and all he's got is an A card.
Yeah.
An A card, mind you. Is that fair? I'll leave it to you, Judge.
Now, Floyd, what does your wife's uncle do for a living?
Oh, he's retired. He's got his pension.
He's...
I thought so.
Oh, wouldn't you retire if you got a pension? Is that any reason to take a man's gas away from him?
Under the present circumstances, it's as good a reason as I can think of. And they're not taking his gas away from him. They're just holding him down to what he needs.
Yeah, well...
The government isn't picking on your wife's Uncle Floyd. They're just cutting out a few things like those trips over to your house for Sunday dinner.
Hey, maybe they're doing me a favor at that. Hey, but I had a fella in here yesterday. He sat right in that chair where you're sitting, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Yeah, I think I'll move. This is too much like a dentist chair.
Hey, don't say dentist to me. But I was telling you about this fella. I don't know who he is, but he came in here, and it turns out he's very close to a certain party, and he tells me that this gas rationing is a lot of bunk.
Oh, he did, huh?
Yeah. He says there's no shortage of gas. He says there's gas to burn right here in Summerfield.
They're not rationing gas, Floyd. They're rationing mileage. They're rationing rubber.
Well, why don't they say so, then?
They've been saying so. If you could just read, you ignorant...
Horace. Perhaps reason would be more effective with our little chum here.
Yeah, gee, let's not get into an argument over this.
All right, Gildy, you try to explain it.
I will. Now, Floyd, you say that gas rationing is the buck.
Well, that's what the fella told me.
But, Floyd, do you know who controls most of the rubber in the world today? The Japs. 90% of it.
That's right.
That's right.
And do you know how important rubber is? This whole country moves on rubber.
Well, now, wait a minute. Trains don't. I've been on a train.
You've been on it. I know, but the fact is that most of this country's traveling is not done on trains or trolleys or airplanes or buses.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Wait a minute. Here's a piece of paper I cut out. Look, 86% of the traveling done by Americans last year was in private automobiles.
Is that a fact?
That's why it's important to keep your car and my car going. Because of all the private automobiles fold up, the country's paralyzed.
Well, sure, I can see that.
Well, that's all there is to it, then. You see, Judge, all it takes is a little reasoning.
Well, there's just one thing I don't get.
What's that?
Well, my tires belong to me. Why shouldn't I ride on them all I want?
Floyd Munyon, you're the stupidest man I ever met. I don't see how you ever got through even barber college. Why?
Hey, Gildy.
What?
What happened to the light of pure reason?
All right, you try explaining it. Let me see you get anywhere with him.
All right. What is it you don't understand, Floyd?
Well, what about this synthetic rubber? What about that?
What about it? Have you got any?
No.
And how are you going to ride on it?
Say, Gildy. Who's explaining this, you or me?
Well, all I got to say is they're my tires, and why shouldn't I ride on them? This is a free country, isn't it?
By George, it won't be free much longer if people figure the way you do.
Now, wait a minute, Mr. Gildersleeve.
I will not if I... Stop waving that razor at me, Floyd.
All I say is a man has a right to his opinion.
Well, I have an opinion I'd like to express at this time.
What's that?
You and all the other people who squawk about gas rationing give me a pain. And not in my tooth, either. I'll see you later.
There's the first portion of the Great Gildersleeve. Gildy has a toothache. He really doesn't want to visit the dentist, though, Lisa. He's a little afraid of the dentist.
Everybody's afraid of the dentist.
Yeah, Mel Blanc appearing as Floyd on this show. And I got to look into a little research on this because Floyd the Barber, or Floyd, was not played by Mel Blanc in the series. Maybe in the very early run like this, Mel Blanc had the role, and then, you know, the other guy, I can't remember who it is, that played him in the series. But enjoying this show, December 6, 1942. We'll get back to Gildersleeve, but first these words.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, it is 12:36. Thank you, Esmeralda, and thank you, Roger. And Lisa and I and Shante are here every single Saturday and Sunday. We're here Saturdays from 11 p.m. till 2 a.m. and Sundays from 11 p.m. till 2 a.m. We're here both nights,
not
6 hours.
Night, both nights.
And we play 6 classic radio shows. What do you think of that, Lisa?
Who are you?
You know, sometimes we get a text every once in a while. People say, can't you play more classic radio shows?
We get that all the time.
And here's the thing, folks. We just can't. We've tried to figure out a way to do it, but it just works out best to play one show and just break it one time in each hour, because there is a there's commercials that have to be aired. There's news and traffic that has to be aired in each hour. And then Lisa and
Carl likes to hear himself talk a little bit.
I like
bit
to hear
too.
My, we like to talk a little bit to you. We just can't do it. But, you know, hopefully you are enjoying the show that we play each hour. And like tonight, we had suspense. We're listening to Gildersleeve, and then we're going to have a detective. And I try to give you a little of everything each weekend, because there's 6 shows. So I try to do at least 1 or 2 comedies, a detective, a mystery, usually a Western. So we try to... Are you cracking your knuckles over there, Lisa?
What?
You were cracking your knuckles.
It just cracked.
Yeah.
I wasn't trying to.
Mm.
It just happens.
Do you know
it
that? I think that's air releasing from... That noise is air releasing from your joint.
I've heard
that. I could
that.
Be wrong.
That's what I've heard as
could
well.
Could be wrong. I've been
sometimes
wrong. I was wrong once in 1977.
Sometimes you just have to crack your joints.
This is true. All right, we're tuning into the Great Gildersleeve. Let's go back to December 6, 1947 for the conclusion. This stars Hal Perry.
I'm sorry that I'm late, Miss Fitch. I shared Judge Hooker's car with him this morning, and when you share his car, you share his private life.
Well, I came to work on a bus. The woman next to me shared my feet.
Very good. They're big enough. Any important problems come up in my absence?
Nothing that I couldn't handle.
I'd like to see anything you couldn't handle, Miss Fitch.
Well, after 33 years in the water department, life doesn't hold many surprises.
Yeah, I suppose not. Say, what are we going to do about that inquiry from the Board of Health? I keep forgetting about it.
Don't worry. I took care of that.
Oh, good.
We had a communique from the pumping station this morning. They're getting low on coal.
Well, you better put in an order for some more coal.
I did. I took care of that.
Oh, fine. By the way, I ran into Mr. Powers over at the air raid meeting last night, and he was complaining
about... I know. I took care of that, too.
Why, Miss Fitz, you're wonderful. Well, what's the order of business here now?
I have all the figures for the annual report, if you want to start on that.
Oh, fine. Let me get a cigar first. Then we'll roll up our sleeves and go to work. Oh, didn't I bring any cigars? Even Donald Nelson can't work without a cigar.
I believe you'll find some in your upper right-hand drawer.
Oh, you even took care of that. You're a remarkable woman, Miss Fitch. If I don't keep an eye on you, Donald Nelson will be stealing you away from me.
Oh, Mr. Gildersleeve, you're joking.
Oh, no, I'm not. Would you like to be in Washington?
No, I'd rather be a big frog in a small puddle.
You mean you're happy here when you could be working for an important man like Donald Nelson?
I don't want to work for anybody important. I want to stay here and work for you.
Yes. Thank you, Miss Fitch. Let's get on with the report. You'll hand me that lighter. Thank you. There. Now. Oh! Ooh, can't even bite on a cigar. I'm afraid I'll have to be seeing a dentist one of these days.
Don't worry.
Oh, no?
I took care of that. You have an appointment for 4 this afternoon.
Oh!
Let's hurry back to the great Gildersleeve, who's in a sorry state by this time, unable to work, unable to eat, and unable to think of anything but his approaching appointment with the dentist. He's decided to come home for a little rest before the ordeal, and we find him now trudging up the walk, while in the living room, Marjorie and Mrs. Ransom are deep in conference.
Don't you tell your uncle now, you hear? Because I don't want him to know I'm making it for him, not till Christmas.
Oh, not a word.
You just pretend like you want to know his measurements out of curiosity.
Mm-hmm. I'll find some way. I should know them, but I keep forgetting. I guess because I can't believe them when I hear them. Leroy? Who's that? Uncle Moore, it's so early.
Hello, my dear. hello, Leela.
Oh, Throckmorton, you just came here to spy.
Oh, no, I live here, remember? Spy on what?
Wouldn't you love to know?
Oh, would I? I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, Christmas isn't so terribly far off, you know.
Christmas. Oh, Christmas.
Yes, I'm making something for you, but I won't tell you what.
Be careful now, you'll give it away.
Well, I thought it wouldn't do any harm to tell him that much, but you'll have to guess the rest.
Oh, well, that's nice of you, Leela, but you really shouldn't have done it. Marjorie, is Leroy home yet?
No, not yet. He usually doesn't bust in till about 3:10.
Burst, Marjorie.
Oh, yeah, burst.
Yes. Well, don't let him get away without speaking to me.
Oh, but Throckmorton, don't you want a guess? Haven't you any curiosity?
Guess? Guess what?
What I'm making for you.
Oh, well, I'm afraid I wouldn't be very good at guessing today, Leela. Tell the truth, I'm feeling a little under the weather.
Uncle Mort, is it that tooth again?
Well, yes.
Oh, I knew it. If you'd gone to the dentist, you'd feel better.
I'm going to the dentist, and I feel worse.
Glad you finally got some sense. Now, why don't you just lie down here and rest till it's time to go?
I think I will, if you don't mind.
Yes, now go get a hot water bottle. That may help.
Lie down now, Throckmorton. That's right. Good. Poor boy. Got a nasty tooth. Lay your head down now, and I'll just kneel here and soothe your brow.
That feels so good. You have healing hands, Leela.
Oh, gracious, I'm afraid they're pretty rough now that I'm doing my own work.
Isn't that admirable? Don't stop. I think the pain is going away.
Throckmorton?
Yes, Leela?
It begins with an S.
If what does?
The thing I'm making for you.
Oh, yeah. That's a nice letter, S.
I don't want you to get the idea that just because I'm making you a present, you have to give me one, though. I don't want you to think that.
Oh, I wasn't thinking that.
Promise you won't give me anything now.
All right, I promise.
On your word of honor?
On my word of honor.
Oh.
Don't go, Leela.
Oh, I'm afraid I must.
But, Leela...
You don't even care enough about my present to guess what it is.
I do, too. Let me see. S. S.
Water bottle. Now, put it on the side that aches. That may relieve it till the dentist gets at it.
Marjorie, guess what? The most wonderful thing has happened. While you were out of the room, all of a sudden, the pain was gone.
Oh, no, you don't.
What do you mean?
You're coming with me to the dentist. Oh, yes, you are. Don't worry, Throckmorton. You go to the dentist, and before you know it... Bingo, it'll be all over.
That's what I'm afraid of, that bingo.
Hello, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Hello, Peavy. Peavy, I just sneaked in for a minute. I've got to talk fast. They're waiting for me outside the drugstore.
Who, the police? The police.
No, no, Marjorie and Leroy.
Mr. Gildersleeve, you're shaking.
Well, you'd be shaking, too. I'm on my way to the dentist.
The dentist? Well, that's something we all have to face at one time or another, I guess.
Don't give me any philosophy. What I want is something that'll cure a toothache, and quickly.
Well, no, that's rather a large order. That's a problem science has been working on for a good many years.
I can't wait for science, Peavy. I've got to be at the dentist in 15 minutes if I don't cure this thing first. Now, how about it?
Well, that word cure, Mr. Gildersleeve, is a word we druggists like to avoid.
Never mind the word. What I want to know is, you sell toothache remedies, don't you?
Yes, I do sell a toothache remedy. Several varieties, as a matter of fact. Though most of them come down to about the same thing, all a clove.
It's all right. A toothache remedy remedies a toothache, doesn't it?
Well, no, I wouldn't say that. It may relieve it temporarily.
Relieve it or remedy it, Peavy, don't quibble. All druggists are supposed to be friendly, aren't they?
Yes, we do rather pride ourselves on our friendliness.
Well, then be a pal. Help me out of this, Peavy. If I can cure this tooth before I get to the dentist, I may be able to call the whole thing off.
Mr. Gildersleeve, if I could guarantee to do that, I wouldn't be in the drug business. I'd set up as a dentist. Yes.
In other words, you admit your toothache remedies are no darn good.
Well, no, I wouldn't say that. But if you're looking for something really effective, I can recommend a cure for corn.
Corns!
I've used it myself with great satisfaction. So has Mrs. Peavy.
A cure for corns isn't going to help me with my tooth, Peavy.
No, but it's a good thing to know about.
You're no help to me, Peavy. Goodbye.
Oh, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Yes?
There is one remedy for toothache I've heard recommended.
What's that?
I've never had occasion to try it myself. I don't know that it has any scientific basis.
Oh, never mind the science. What is it?
Have you ever tried placing a penny next to gum?
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Wouldn't you think the doc could get some decent magazines in here? Had a comic book in the whole place.
Be quiet, Leroy.
Why, who's dead?
Leroy.
What are you so nervous about, Unc?
I'm not nervous. I just don't like waiting, that's all. Makes me restless.
Your hand's trembling.
Leroy, read your magazine.
Look at mine, steady as a rock. I bet I could hold it still for 5 minutes.
You think you could hold your tongue still for a few minutes?
Sure.
Well, try it.
If you're not nervous, Unc, what did you make Marge drive you down for?
Well, because, if you must know, dentists sometimes give people gas. I don't want to drive home, and I'm under the influence of laughing gas. Now, stop asking questions.
What are you reading, Unc?
National Geographic.
Interesting?
Oh, yes, very.
Wouldn't it be easier to read if you turned it right side up?
What?
Dr. Shanks is ready now.
After you, Unc.
No, you go ahead, Leroy.
Age before beauty.
Leroy, you get in there.
All right.
Hello there, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Oh, hello, Doctor.
I won't keep this young man but a minute, just finishing up with
oh,
him.
Oh, that's all right. No hurry. Take your time, Doc. They always tell you that, Marjorie. It won't take but a minute. It isn't going to hurt a bit. That poor kid's liable to be in there an hour.
Oh, I don't think so. He hasn't got much left to do.
I feel sorry for him, though, my dear. He puts up a big front, but underneath it, I'll bet he's scared to death.
I don't believe Leroy has a nerve in his entire body. If he had, he couldn't stand the noises he makes.
Well, there's something in that. Say, it's awfully quiet in there, isn't it?
Is there anything strange about that?
No, I just wonder what they're doing to him.
Why don't you try not to think about it, Uncle Mort? Why don't you read your magazine?
You suppose they could be giving him gas in there?
Why do you keep worrying about gas? Dentists don't give gas all the time.
Well, they never let you know when they're going to. They sneak up on you with it.
Did you ever have gas?
No, but I've heard all about it. Laughing gas. They sneak up behind you and clap one of those things over your face.
Oh, Uncle Mort, that's old-fashioned. If you go to the dentist more often, you get rid of those ideas.
You needn't try to make me feel good, my dear. I know what I'm in for. Just wish it wasn't so quiet, that's all. I could stand it if it wasn't so quiet. If somebody would just make a noise.
All right, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Uncle Moore, that's you.
Me?
Steady. Steady.
What's the matter, Unc? You look as if you were going to the chair.
I am. Well, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Oh, hello, Doc. Long time no see, huh?
How have you been? Just climb into the chair there and make yourself comfortable.
Yeah, I've been pretty well, Doctor. Except for this little tooth of mine.
Well, we'll get to the bottom of that. How's that new neighbor of yours that moved in there next door to you?
Oh, Mrs. Ransom? Oh, she's fine.
See much of her?
Oh, we pass the time of day now and then.
What's that? What's that, Doc?
Just my instruments, a few drills and whatnot.
Whatnot.
What's the matter? Why, you're perspiring. You're looking a little pale there.
I am?
Miss Mitchell, take that bottle there and give him a whiff, will you?
Oh, no, you don't.
Now, Mr. Gildersleeve, it's nothing to be afraid of.
Take it away. Take it away, Doc.
Breathe in, please.
Yeah, take a breath.
You can't fool me. I know what you're up to.
Hold it under his nose. Now, breathe in. Here. Come out of that.
Stop it.
Nothing but spirits of ammonia.
I thought it was laughing gas.
Laughing gas? I haven't given laughing gas in 20 years.
Yeah.
Let's have a look at that mouth of yours now.
Yeah. It's a high tooth on the upper left hand thigh.
Well, plenty of space in there.
I see, Doc.
That's very interesting.
It is.
You get a sharp pain when you bite down? Miss Mitchell, hand me those tweezers, will you?
Doc.
Relax, man. Relax. This isn't going to hurt.
Where have I heard that before?
Now, open your mouth.
Okay.
By the way, what did you have for dinner on Thanksgiving?
Turkey.
I thought so. There. There's the whole cause of your trouble.
What's that?
A little sliver of turkey bone lodged between your second and third molars. When you bit down on it, it jabbed your gum.
That's all?
That's all.
There's nothing else the matter with my teeth?
Not that I can see. That'll be $10, please.
Dear diary, well, it's been nearly a week now, and I've still got more than three quarters of a tank full. I've managed to get to most of the places I wanted to go, and I even got to one place I didn't want to go to at all. Yeah, maybe it isn't going to be so bad. What worries me is people like Floyd the barber. They don't seem to realize that the shortage of rubber is nationwide, and that's why rationing has to be nationwide. I read where Jeffers says the tires we have on our cars now are going to have to last us at least till the middle of 1944. Of course, I don't know Jeffers personally, but Donald Nelson speaks well of him. Anyway, it strikes me that saving our tires is like saving money. Most of us can't do it unless we figure out a system that'll force us to. And that's what this gas rationing is. Naturally, it's going to take a little time to get it adjusted so that every man gets the gas he needs to get him to his job. But that's the intention. So let's have a little patience and try to make this thing work, folks. Because if it doesn't, heaven help our men at the front and heaven help us. Good night, everybody.
Original music heard on this program was composed and conducted by Billy Mills. This is Ken Carpenter speaking for the Kraft Cheese Company and inviting you to tune in again next week for the further adventures of the Great Gildersleeve.
This program has reached you from Hollywood. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
That's The Great Gildersleeve, going back to December 6th, 1942. Hal Perry as Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve. I read the suspense. Lisa loves it when I make a boo-boo. Don't you?
No.
No, not at all.
I'm rooting for
Gildersleeve,
you
and that had a great cast in it. Verna Felton was in that. Walter Tetley, Mel Blanc, Earl Ross. I think Shirley Mitchell even appeared in that. Richard LeGrand. Great cast on The Great Gildersleeve. Hope you enjoyed that. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, it is hour three of program 178 in the series. This is the WGN Radio Theater. My co-host Lisa Wolf is here, and you're bouncing around over there.
I'm bouncing.
She's bouncing, very bouncy.
Thanks.
I like your hair. It's lighter, and you got a nice haircut.
Thank you.
Looks great.
Thank you.
Too bad this isn't television.
That's okay. We're
I haven't shaved in 2 days. It's radio.
You seriously haven't?
Yeah, look. I ran
There's
out of razor
there.
Blades. I went today to Target and I bought some razor blades, but I was out. So I didn't shave for 2 days.
I don't have a lot of growth.
Well, I know.
A little spotty there.
Here.
No, not
right,
too
hang
much.
On. Hear that?
Yeah, very little.
On the radio?
Very
all
little.
Right. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar in this hour. We have a lot of people asking for Johnny Dollar. So we have
yes,
it
we
right
have.
Here. It's all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actress stars in the upcoming film Rough Night about a male stripper who ends up dead during a bachelorette party weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And the winner gets a Twilight Zone 4-CD set.
All right, Twilight Zone, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actress was the object of Robert Redford's desires in Indecent Proposal.
Some things aren't for sale.
Such as?
Well, you can't buy people.
All right, who is that actress? 312-981-7200. We'll be right back.
We're playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it again.
Well, some things aren't for sale.
Such as?
Well, you can't buy people.
Let's talk to Steve. Hey, Steve.
Yeah, that would be Demi Moore.
Demi Moore is right. Steve, you are a winner. You know what you've won?
Twilight Zone,
yes.
Which I watch every night at 10:30 on MeTV.
Oh, fantastic. Well, this way you can throw them into your car or listen to them at other places. This is a 4-CD set hosted by Stacy Keach, which would be a little bit different than what you watch. And they're terrific. Carl produced them, and they have some of the best actors around in them. No question.
Right. So around like a donut.
Around here, around there, around Chicago, and around Hollywood.
Yeah. Enjoy it, my friend. Thank you so much.
Take care.
All right. Thank you, guys.
All right, Steve. Take care.
All right.
Well, it is time now for yours truly, Johnny Dollar. He was an insurance investigator, Lisa. And it premiered on radio in 1949. It was one of the longest-running detective shows. It ran 14 seasons. And it followed the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. He worked for the Universal Adjustment Bureau, which was some kind of insurance agency. And he worked for them, and he tried to recover valuables for a cut of the goods. And each story recounted in flashback, Johnny listed each line item from his expense account. He'd be like, item one, plane ticket to Vegas or whatever it was. And he just did that throughout the whole thing. Dick Powell was the very first person they auditioned for the role. They made a pilot episode with him, but they did not go with him for the series. But that pilot episode does exist. I'll air it sometime. Then they cast Edmund O'Brien, who was a movie star. He was doing a lot. He was in DOA, which was a good movie. Mm-hmm. And they cast Edmund O'Brien. He starred for a year or so, and we have an episode with him. Then John Lund, then Bob Bailey, Mandel Kramer, and others. It was last heard in 1962, but interestingly, it was never made a transition to television. It was so popular on radio. You know, all of these shows, I shouldn't say all, but a lot of the shows made the transition to television. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, did not. So we have an episode for you now called The Port-au-Prince Story. This stars Edmund O'Brien. Here's part one from 1950 of yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
From Hollywood, it's time now for Edmund O'Brien as...
Johnny Dollar.
Dr. Colby calling back, Johnny.
Oh, yeah, Frank. How am I?
Oh, you've fallen behind. You'll need boosters for diphtheria and smallpox, typhoid, cholera. And if we can find room, why, we'll bring you up to date on your tetanus.
Oh. Well, where do I get them?
We'll have it all right here in the office, or I can stop by on my way home.
Well, that's not what I mean, Frank. It takes a long time to get to Haiti, and those plane seats aren't very comfortable at best.
Edmund O'Brien, in another transcribed adventure of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to Home Office, America Federated Life Insurance Company, Hartford, Connecticut. Attention, Harvard Huntington, General Manager. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my assignment in Port-au-Prince, Haiti. Expense account item one, $15 for a pair of tickets to Detective Story at the Hudson Theater, New York, which I never got a chance to use since I was seated in the library of your Hartford home promptly at curtain time.
Dollar, I want to thank you for coming out here. Sorry to break into your evening like this, but since I have, I'll get right to the point. Perhaps you've heard of the Gordon family here in Hartford.
Well, what I see of the society page is when I'm flipping back to the sports section, but I've noticed the name. Diamond-studded, aren't they?
Immensely wealthy. Pillars of society. And, surprisingly, quite a proper family. That is, all but one of the sons, Ralph. Heavy drinker, complete wastrel, ne'er-do-well.
Oh, a blot on the old escutcheon.
Yes, continually getting into one scrape or another. Now he's done it again.
I take it that you're not worried about Ralph the man, but about Ralph the policyholder,
huh? Yeah. Well, to put it bluntly, yes. I don't think it's unethical for a company to protect its interests. In this case, the policy is in the amount of $150,000.
Quite a piece of paper.
Yes. And to be quite candid, I rue the day it was issued. But the point is this. Ralph Gordon, at last report, is dying aboard his yacht at Port-au-Prince, Haiti.
Then you don't need me. You need the Mayo Clinic.
Dollar, I hesitate to even mention this in the presence of a sane man. But from everything we can learn, young Gordon is not dying from any known malady. He's dying as a result... Oh, it's pure nonsense. He's supposed to be dying as the result of voodoo curse. Now, anybody with any
sense... All right, wait a minute. Where'd you get your information?
From his older brother, Thomas. He's a doctor. He's down there in Haiti with Ralph. Now, I want you to go down and debunk this thing, Dollar. Find out what's wrong. Why, any sane man knows there's no such voodoo. You don't believe in it, do you?
No. No, not unless I see it working. Expense account item two, $148.70, Hartford to Port-au-Prince via airplane. Expense account item three, $32.50, tropical clothes. And item four, $25 spent while I browsed the waterfront bars in Port-au-Prince, looking for somebody who knew where the Gordon yacht was moored. When I found him, he not only knew that, he knew everything.
It don't matter what you want to know about this blasted island, ask me first. My name is Cap Regan, and I've been here since before repeal. Give up my citizenship, I did, with the help of a couple of prohibition agents. And I figure on sailing out my final days right here. Yeah, what do you want with the Gordon craft?
I want to see the owner, Ralph Gordon. How do I get to it?
I reckon you pay me to row you out to her. My dinghy's down to the foot of the pier, just a short hail from where we're at.
Well, good. Come on, let's shove off.
Just wait till I down my ration here. That'll put me in ship shape. Yeah, what'd you say you wanted with that schooner? You figuring on buying her?
Oh, thank you for the compliment. If I bought a boat today, it'd have to be a surplus life raft. I told you I want to talk to Gordon.
A friendly visit or the other kind.
Uh-huh. I'm beginning to see how you know so much about this island.
Well, never question, never learn. Remember that, Summy. This way, we veer off to starboard. Yes, sir. Never question, never learn.
Look, I'm an insurance investigator. A company sent me down here to look things over, including Gordon.
Something wrong?
I don't know yet. What do you know about him?
A jug full, Sonny, a jug full. Stood into the harbor about 2 months back. No sooner dropped his hook than his crew started taking the pierhead leap. Everybody jumped for the bosun, for reasons of his own.
What was the matter with Gordon?
He was off seas over all the time. And you navigate with sextant, a compass, and parallel ruler, Sonny, not with a double shot and a water chaser. Get the drift?
They were afraid to sail with him?
Oh, that's the line of it. If you'd ever pile into a reef, you feel the same. Oh, yeah, here we are. Now, there's my dinghy down at the bottom of the ladder. And there's Gordon's yacht out there, you see? The tug is passing astern of her now.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a lot of boat.
Yeah, she carries a suit of sail like a grain clipper. Oh, why don't you see her close up? She's dirty as a garbage scow. All right, give her a hail now, Sonny. We're close enough.
Hey, anybody aboard? Hey, aboard the yacht. Anyone home?
Yes? What do you want?
If the ship was dirty, I didn't notice. It may have had good lines, too, but it couldn't have touched what stood still at the rail, wearing clam diggers, an off-the-shoulder T-shirt, and a Caribbean tan.
There's a trimmel for you. That'll be his wife.
Can I come aboard?
Who are you? What do you want?
I'm Johnny Dollar from Hartford. I want to talk to Ralph.
Oh. Why, yes, then. I guess you'll have to come aboard.
Here, I'll swing the stern into the ladder. There you be. I'm steady now.
Okay, Cap, you wait for me, huh?
Well, how are things in Ralphie's old hometown?
Cool. But not as cool as this reception.
Don't let it throw you. What is this, a friendly drop-in business or just plain snooping? It's the last. I'm Edwina, the wife they haven't heard about at home.
Congratulations. Now I know why you like the way your shoulders bare. The better to keep a chip on them.
If you're through being sharp, I'll let you hear what's left of my husband. Come on, through here. Hey, Ralph. You got a visitor from Hartford.
Get away from this cabin. You gold-digging little chiseler. You take your visitor, will you?
Well, there you are, chum. He's got the door locked. It'll stay that way till he runs out of wine. You heard enough?
Yes, enough to know how you acquired your charming attitude.
Forget it. I walked into it with my eyes wide open. Let's get back out on deck. The light's better for throwing barbs at each other.
Sure. Sounds like fun.
Well, do I have to help you off the boat?
Not until you help me by answering some questions. I'm an insurance investigator. I was sent down here by the company that holds a policy on your husband's life.
What should I do? Faint?
The story they got was that Ralph was dying from some kind of a voodoo curse. They don't believe it, neither do I.
Why not? It might be true.
Hmm?
Oh, some old guy, they call him Papa Luau, came out to the boat. He yelled some things at Ralph, and when Ralphie threw a bottle at him, he swore he'd put a curse on him. Hey, how did they hear about it back in Hartford?
Ralph's brother, Dr. Thomas Gordon, told them. You know him?
Yeah, we hate each other. I wonder why he'd tell them.
Maybe because he thought somebody who'd be better off with Ralph dead was using Papa Luau's curse as a cover-up. How would you stand as his widow?
Get off this boat. Get off.
What's the trouble, Eddie?
Oh, Em. Yeah, come here, will you?
Who's the boarding party?
Just get him off, Em.
Sure, honey. Well, mate, do you walk in or dive?
Save your strength for the last scene, Goliath. I was just leaving. Expense account item 5, $3 paid to Cap Reagan as water taxi fare. Item 6, 80 cents, land taxi fare to Hotel Francois. An up at the heels hangout for not only the best in tourists, but also Brother Thomas Gordon, M.D.
Please make yourself comfortable. Could I offer you something?
Nothing but some brotherly advice.
Certainly. I feel like a stupid fool for not being able to handle this thing myself. So now that you're here, call on me for anything. First, have you seen Ralph?
I tried to, but he locked himself in his cabin. Tell me, as a medical man, how do you digest this voodoo curse story?
Why, it's ridiculous. Good heavens, this is the 20th century. I do think that science doesn't know everything it would like to know. Voodoo, black magic. There are stories, supposedly true, but any victim would have to have a highly susceptible mind. And I know my brother, Mr. Dollar. His mind is susceptible only to his own whims and fancies.
Then what's the matter with him?
That's it, I don't know. He's drawn within himself and seems to be searching almost insanely for escape through alcohol.
Hasn't anybody thought of putting him on the wagon? It's a horrible idea, but it works.
I don't think this is the time for it. He's suffering mentally and needs release.
Well, that leaves us only one thing to think about, and no matter how thin you cut it, it's still voodoo.
I'm a man of science, Mr. Dollar. I'd make hypocrisy out of all my knowledge and training if I attacked the problem from that direction. But, please let me know what you find.
All right. Are you enjoying this, Lisa?
I sure am, Carl.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, the Port-au-Prince matter. This stars Edmund O'Brien. And I heard the voice of Willard Waterman in that cast. Willard Waterman played Gildersleeve after Hal Perry did. Took it into television. And I had the, I've talked about this on the air, I had the great honor of playing Leroy to him playing Gildersleeve on stage at, I think it was in, I don't know if it was in New Jersey or somewhere like that, that we were doing a reenactment of a great Gildersleeve, and I played Leroy, and he was there. He was the, you know, he was the guy. I mean, they were all going to see Willard Waterman. And also Shirley Mitchell was there. She played Leela in the broadcast. So there was two original cast members of Gildersleeve.
Yeah, we always said, I wish you had the, had some kind of recording of this.
But... And then that same time that I was there, also Lon Clark and Charlotte Manson. Now, Lon Clark was Nick Carter, and Charlotte Manson was Patsy Bowen, his, you know, like his girlfriend secretary type of thing. And we did a Nick Carter, and I played a bad guy in that one.
Well, that's right up your
guy.
Right up your alley.
Nick Carter got me. He put me in jail. I think I went to the chair in that one. But I got to be right next to Willard Waterman and playing Leroy. That was a lot of fun. And someone videotaped it, and then somebody contacted me and said, oh, I think I have a videotape of that.
Right.
Wow. That would be
recently?
Cool. Yeah, not too long ago. So if we could get that, we could post it. That would be so much
fun. I'd love to see it. Hear it.
That would be a lot of fun. All right, let's take a quick break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, so you know what, Lisa?
In just
a few minutes, we're going to go to news. Then it's the conclusion to yours truly, Johnny Dollar. But you know what we have next week? Because it's Mother's Day.
It's Mother's Day. Yeah. Why, did you do something special for me?
Yeah, we have a Mother's Day. We have two or three Mother's Day shows.
All right. We've got Our Miss Brooks.
Yeah, that's a Mother's Day show.
Dragnet.
That's a Mother's Day
show. And
Box
13.
And that's a Mother's Day show.
Is it really?
Yeah,
but those are Saturday.
Three. Yep.
But
well,
Mother's Day is on Sunday.
I know, but Sunday it's already over. You know what I mean?
No, it's not.
Yeah,
all
listen.
Right.
The way it works is we're only on for 1 hour on Sunday. So this gives us... Saturday and Sunday.
All right. Well, I like presents.
Yeah.
Sunday
we have
Gunsmoke.
You want something from me?
Sure. Sunday we have Gunsmoke, Boston Blackie, and The Whistler. We haven't played The Whistler in a while.
Good lineup. And all three of those shows on Saturday are Mother's Day programs.
All right.
Yeah,
I'll be looking forward to that.
It's a lot of work scheduling this show and doing all
that. Tell me about it.
You know, finding shows. And...
You're talking to me. I'm the one that does all the work.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
I know how it is.
All right. And when we come back from the news, it's the conclusion to Johnny Dollar, so don't go away.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
We're back here, and don't forget, we're here every Saturday and Sunday from 11 p.m. till 2 o'clock in the morning playing all your favorite classic radio shows. We have a website, WGNRadioTheater.com, WGNRadioTheater.com, and you can search our Facebook page. Just go to Facebook and search WGN Radio Theater. And please like us when you do. And we have a Twitter, too. I don't know what that is or means or how to do it or what it's even for.
We also have a podcast. We have all of our shows podcast from number one until...
Yeah, but don't listen to number one.
No, go up a little bit.
Go to four or five.
Go to WGNRadio.com and all the podcasts are there.
Yeah.
Go to WGN.
There's 178 of them up there.
Well, there will be. There will be at the end of tonight.
Program 178. All right, we're listening to yours truly, Johnny Dollar, from May 30th, 1950. Here's the conclusion.
Expense account item 7, $4, rental of horse and cart, in which my walking tourist guide, Cap Riggan, and I jolted out of town in search of Papa Loire. Something made me feel like I was riding my last mile in a tumbril en route to the guillotine. The moonlight was fighting a losing battle against an army of storm clouds that was sweeping in. And then, to make it worse, I heard a drum.
Hear that, sonny?
Yeah, sort of a tired Gene Krupa.
Means we're getting close to Papa's quarters.
Is he the only one around here?
Yep, none of the good Ogans performs in his territory. He's too mean.
Oh, great.
And that ain't no galley news, it's the truth. I tell you, there's lots of black magic, as so-called. It's nothing but tourist bait. But Papa, he's a genuine article. Let me tell you about one fella he loaded a curse onto. He was a knighted, and before he got through with it...
Cap, please, you keep your mind on your driving, and I'll keep mine on pleasant memories.
Well, I ain't got no more driving to think about.
What's the matter?
That's the path over there by that gnarled old tree. From here on, you plot your own course. This is close enough for me.
Me too. Say, wait a minute. How do I know I can't put a curse on him, huh? I never tried.
Smooth silence, sonny.
The path led along the edge of a field of sugarcane, and on the other side of me was a solid wall of jungle. First, I smelled some feathers burning. Then I heard the chant. There was a door in the wall of jungle that led to a small clearing, and before the moon was smothered by another cloud, I saw a shack. Smoke curled out through an open door, and I could see the glow of a fire on the floor inside. Hey, Papa! I want to talk to you.
Who's come to the house of Papa Loire?
Well, my name wouldn't mean anything to you, but what I have to say will. Can I come in?
Entrez. What are these words of so great importance as you wish to interrupt Papa Loire?
All I know about voodoo is that I don't believe it.
Legba. Legba.
I've come to you because I haven't got any answers from anybody else. I want to know what's behind this so-called curse you put on Ralph Gordon.
You not believe. You let me make you believe. Ralph Gordon, he die. Tonight, in the wind and rain. And for you, I have magic now. See my fire? You will believe the smoke. Now, believe!
I couldn't see what he'd thrown onto the fire. He'd reached behind him for it. But when the smoke from it whirled around me, it seemed to grab my throat and squeeze. I stumbled back through the door. I hadn't believed in voodoo when I'd come in. But going out, I wasn't so sure. My throat burned. I staggered around in the heavy jungle air. When I could breathe again, I gulped in enough to lift the Graf Zeppelin. When I got back into the shack, he was gone. He hadn't left much of what he'd smoked me out with, but he'd left enough. A few shreds of photographic film on the dirt floor. And film made of cellulose and nitrates not only takes pictures, it puts out nitric oxide and nitrogen dioxide when it's burned. A combination that would live up to the demands of any gas chamber. We headed back to the yacht, and this time I boarded without a hail.
you, Em. We can't go on with this.
Well, this time, you haven't a change of heart.
Well, that's what happened.
I'm not so sure that makes any difference. Maybe you're in too deep to back out. How would you like it if I spilled the whole thing?
Oh, what difference does it make? It'd be better than landing in a Haitian prison with your motives showing.
Then get over, Angel. I'll be in my sack when you make up your mind.
Em, how wrong you can be.
See you later, huh?
What are you doing on this ship? Get off.
Oh, no. Not after that intriguing conversation I just heard.
How much did you hear?
If I added it to the gas assault Papa Luau threw at me, it'd be enough to nail you and Loverboy here for conspiracy to commit murder.
I don't know what you're talking about.
The point is, I know what you two were talking about.
Listen to me. You've got to believe me.
I don't have to, but try me anyway.
I admit that Em and I... Well, I did get involved with him. It was because Ralph turned into another man after we were married.
This probably marks the first time in history that an icicle melted in Port-au-Prince.
Please, let me finish. When my marriage went to pieces, I had to do something or go crazy. To see Ralph drinking up all the champagne on the island was just more than I could take. I was going to divorce him and leave with Em, but we weren't going to murder him.
You know, Chapter 1 has so many holes in it, it could have been printed by a punch press. You don't worry about landing in prison with your motive showing when all you're planning is divorce.
You do when people are waiting for your husband to die under mysterious circumstances. That's why I was trying to make Em go away. If Ralph died, who would look any farther than the erring wife? Unless Em was hiding something.
Can you lock this cabin from the outside?
Yes. What are you going to do? You aren't going to lock me in here?
No, just your playmate. You're coming with me.
Where?
To Papa Loau's. I want to hear what kind of a story you tell in front of him.
You don't believe me.
No. With $150,000 at stake, I don't even believe myself. There's a shack. You go in first. May not be heroic, but it's the best way I can think of to catch his reaction when he sees you. Come on, go ahead. Go on in.
Who is it come to Papua's door? Who are you, woman?
Well, Mr. Dollar, are you satisfied?
Not quite.
And you did not believe. Why you are here? You wish again to see the power of my smoke?
Let's just drop the act, Papa. I know what you threw in the fire.
Was my bokor smoke? You not yet believe?
A good man from a police laboratory can sift enough out of those ashes to know it was film.
What is this you say?
I say that I've got enough on you, you old fake, to put you in the local pokey.
Who dare speak thus to Papa Loa?
And that's where you're going to go if you don't cooperate. Now, that's a promise.
What is it you want?
Did somebody put you up to this curse business that Ralph Gordon is supposed to be under?
A man of your race. Now go. That is all.
It's not enough. What was his name?
I not know the name.
What did he look like then?
My eyes were closed.
Nuts. Come on. I'm taking you into town. I'll have to drag you by the hair.
No, don't touch me. I will tell you how this is. It is true. I do not know the name or the face. He come to me. He ask me when comes next rain and wind. I tell him last night. But it's tonight. The storm come with the seat. He tell me he needs storm to close portholes in the ship. He say, if I bring this curse, I will be best hogan on 80 because it kill white man. That is difficult. That is all. Now, you go.
How about the film for the fire? Did he give it to you?
That is true, not long before you come.
Well, get rid of it, Papa, before you lose your license to operate.
You go now. Papa Luau will be alone. Go now.
All right, Mrs. Gordon, all right. Let's not stay for the music.
Could you make head or tail of what he said?
What goes into your husband's cabin?
Nothing but food and wine. Mostly wine.
Who fixes his meals?
I do. Our cook left us.
Yeah? Where does the wine come from? You said it was champagne, didn't you?
Yes. It always comes from the same place, a liquor shop in town, a case at a time. Nothing makes any sense. What are you going to do?
All I can do. Try every angle. That's not all I'm going to try in that liquor shop. Expense account item 8, 450, two quarts of rum, the purchase of which helped loosen the tongue of the proprietor who had been supplying Ralph Gordon's champagne. And the words that poured out weren't exactly intoxicating, but they sent me staggering to the nearest phone.
Yes, hello.
Dr. Gordon, this is Dollar.
Good heavens, Dollar, I've been wondering about you. What have you learned?
Well, first tell me this. What would happen to a man if he was in a ship's cabin on a stormy night with all the portholes closed and there was a lot of dry ice in there with him?
What? What was that?
A small room, no ventilation, a lot of dry ice. A lush, maybe passed out. What would happen?
Good Lord. Dry ice is solidified carbon dioxide. If enough of it evaporated into the room...
A lush would not be bothered by a hangover the next morning because he wouldn't wake up, right?
Exactly. The gas, although not toxic, would force the oxygen from the atmosphere, and the result would be asphyxia. What are you getting at, Dollar?
Well, that curse your brother is suffering from is very scientific. The champagne he's been getting has been chilled by dry ice, about 5 pounds per case. One went out just before the storm broke.
Good Lord. It may be just coincidence, but Ralph's wife and that bosun...
Yeah, I know. For a bosun, he'd make a very good chemist. They sent for a pull motor. If it's too late for your brother, maybe I can use it.
Sonny, serve around, George, for my shipmate and me. This is rum weather, Sonny.
Never mind around, Cap. You got to row me out of that yacht again.
What? In this weather? I wouldn't ask old Neptune himself to set out on a night like this.
Come on, come on, Cap. I'm in a hurry. Here's 20 bucks.
Why, one time off the Horner. Oh, what did you say?
I didn't think it could rain any harder than it had been, but it did. Visibility was zero. But about 20 minutes out, Cap spotted her riding lights.
There she lies, Sonny.
We were on target, but so was somebody else. A searchlight stabbed out at us.
Hey, this sounds like Prohibition days. Who's giving us the broadside?
I can't tell.
I'll lay a pelican hook over his head if I get my hands on him. Oh, Cap! I got my left leg.
Get down the bottom, Cap. I'm going over the side. There was nothing to do but swim, so I swam. I tried to remember how many shots had been fired, and that's where I made my mistake. There was a lull in the shooting, which I took to mean that the gun was empty, so I thrashed my way to the ladder. But when I got there, the first thing I saw after I'd shaken the water out of my eyes was the muzzle of a rifle. The face looking down the barrel at me belonged to Brother Thomas Gordon, M.D.
Sorry, Dollar. Killing you wasn't in my plan. But now it'll have to be done.
I was waiting for a bullet to come my way, but instead the doctor did.
Are you all right, Dollar?
I'll thank you later for spoiling his aim.
Forget it. That's me, big-hearted M.
Say, get a boat hook on the doctor. He's our prize fish. Don't let him get away. I grabbed a fire axe out of its case on my way to Ralph Gordon's cabin. If it needed ventilating, I knew one quick way to do it. I didn't check for oxygen. I took a deep breath, held it, and went in. The cabin was littered with wine bottles, and in one corner, in an open case, was the dry ice that was in the process of cooling Gordon off for good. He was stretched out on his bunk. I hefted him to my shoulder and used the last of my breath getting him out of there.
What's the matter with him?
Come on, help me to get him stretched out.
All right.
Come on, give me a hand, will you?
Yeah.
Maybe we can save a policyholder. All right. One, two, three, four. One, two, three, four. One, two, three. Expense account item 9, $30. Cover charge at a hospital.
where I put the revived Gordon under the care of a doctor, not his brother. His brother happened to be resting in a jail cell at the time, waiting the formal charge of attempted murder. Motive, the family fortune. Item 10, same as item 9. Same hospital where they patched up Cap Reagan. Item 11, $40. An ounce of voodoo perfume for the lovely but sometimes chilly Edwina. Maybe if she tries that kind of magic on her husband, he'll spend less time with the bottle joy and more with her kind. An expense account, item 12, $148.70, return trip to Hartford. Expense account total, $424.70. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, stars Edmund O'Brien in the title role and is written by Gil Dowd and David Ellis, with music composed and conducted by Leith Stevens. Edmund O'Brien may soon be seen in the Columbia picture 7-Eleven Ocean Drive. Featured in tonight's cast were Earl Lee, Willard Waterman, Ted DeCorsia, Charlotte Lawrence, Lou Krugman, Byron Kane, Vic Ryan, and Clayton Post. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, is produced and directed by Jaime Del Valle. Join us next week at the same time when, from Hollywood, Edmund O'Brien returns in another transcribed adventure of...
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Beginning next week, Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, will be heard at this same time on Thursday nights. Thursday nights for Johnny Dollar. This is CBS, where you hear suspense every Thursday night, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The producer-director of that was Jaime Del Valle. That's a... Imagine going through life with Jaime Del Valle.
Jaime is a very popular...
Yeah, it's spelled J-A-I-M-E.
Jaime.
And then Del, D-E-L, and then Valle, V-A-L-L-E.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Jaime Del Valle.
It's Jaime.
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 Jaime Del Valle.
Jaime. Close. You're really good pronouncing names, though.
Yeah.
That's one of your strong suits.
The Port-au-Prince matter, starring Edmund O'Brien. How's that? I said that right.
That was good.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, May 30th, 1950. This was a good series, I'll tell you. Johnny Dollar was quite the action-packed
insurance investigator. Isn't that Mike's favorite?
It is Mike Gastella's favorite show.
Mike.
There you go, Mike.